The WBFO Brief Podcast is made possible by Roswell Park Comprehensive Cancer Center. Access to the newest treatments and most sophisticated testing is so important. It matters where you receive your cancer care. Spend one day with Roswell Park. Visit roswellpark.org.
Today's WBFO Brief was recorded at around 8:30 in the morning. This is WBFO News.
Student protests grew tense Wednesday night as UB police ordered protesters to disperse. According to the university, 16 individuals, quote, including some students and other individuals not affiliated with the University of Buffalo, were arrested outside Hockstetter Hall. University police were assisted by New York State Police, the Erie County Sheriff's Office, and Amherst Police. UB says its picketing and assembling policy prohibits encampments and overnight assemblies. The university also says that two officers were assaulted. We'll hear later from WBFO's Grant Ashley, who was on scene last night covering the story for the UB Spectrum. 29 employees at a software company in Amherst will be losing their jobs due to contract loss. According to a WARN notice filed with the State Labor Department, DeFi Solutions will be laying off those 29 employees, or about a fifth of their workforce, between now and late July. 108 employees will remain at the company's Amherst location. And the village of Westfield in Chautauqua County will be receiving just over $130,000 in funding from the Appalachian Regional Commission to move forward with a downtown redevelopment project. According to the commission, the project would turn a vacant lot near the waterfront into a 300-seat amphitheater and park space, as well as create formal access to the Chautauqua Creek waterfront. Congressman Nick Langworthy said the project would encourage economic growth. Well, initial plans to lay off 30 employees in the Buffalo School District are gaining some favorable reviews from Buffalo school board members. The Buffalo News reports the views were shared during Wednesday night's meeting of the school board as the district works to cover a budget gap. Officials stress the plan for 30 layoffs is preliminary and that several staff members are going to be moved into new positions to fill district vacancies. The Buffalo School Board will vote on the budget on May 15th. And Erie County is marking Polonia Day today with the raising of the Polish flag at the Rath Building. The day commemorates the raising of the Polish flag on the Victory Column in the city of Berlin, Germany, on May 2nd, 1945. Today's event is scheduled for 11 o'clock this morning.
This WBFO Brief podcast is made possible by Canisius University, where high-flying griffs find a top-flight education. For the last 8 years, Canisius has been recognized on U.S. News' list of best colleges and universities. Learn more at canisius.edu.
On Wednesday, students at the University of Buffalo joined in a wave of encampments and protests across the country calling for divestment from Israel at institutions of higher education. The protests have also led to questions of when police should intervene in such demonstrations and if First Amendment rights of college-age journalists are being respected at those events. WBFO's Emily Watkins spoke with Grant Ashley, editor-in-chief of the UB Spectrum, on Wednesday night to hear about his experience and about the police presence on the campus. Grant Ashley, by the way, is employed with WBFO. Here is that conversation.
Hey, Grant, thanks for making the time to update us on what happened at UB tonight.
Yeah, no problem, Emily.
First off, how are you doing and how are your reporters holding up?
I'm doing all right. I'm a little hungry, but that's about it. I think we're all kind of just like processing what happened, trying to figure out the best way to go about writing about it at the moment. You know, I think some people are still kind of like shocked about what happened. We were also contemplating like, oh, what do we do if we like get arrested? That was going through our heads at some point.
How soon after protesters gathered, did police arrive on campus? And was it just the campus police or was it other local municipalities?
Other police from different off-campus departments started arriving shortly after the march began. There were Erie County Sheriff's Office deputies there. There was Amherst Police. One of the Tonawanda Police Departments was there. I forget if it was city or town. Kenmore was there. State Police showed up at one point. So it was a pretty large group. They left and then they came back at around 8 p.m. when they were starting to, around sunset, when they were starting to tell the protesters, like, hey, if you don't leave, we're going to start arresting you guys.
So do we know if UB made the call to send police? And if so, do we know what the objective of sending the police was?
Yes. So UB did call the police both initially and later on, shortly before they started arresting protesters. A university spokesperson told me that was as a precaution and to provide support to the university police.
In a video your paper posted tonight, a group of what appears to be police officers approaches a reporter, which we now know is you. Here's sound from that part of the video.
Get out of here. I'm media.
I don't care.
Go. Get out of here.
We asked you to go.
Get out of here.
We got time to record all day.
What happened there?
Yeah, so I was actually trying to get away from the protest at that point to get a better vantage point. And then they were walking toward me, and then I tried to, like, kind of get out of their way. And then, you know, he was like, get out of here. And I was kind of like, I am. And then I was like, I'm media. And he said, I don't care. And he pushed me.
He physically pushed you?
Yes, he did. Yeah, he did. I mean, it wasn't like, you know, push me on the ground, but he did push me back. And then at some point, I was on the side of the street with the protesters, and I tried to kind of walk around to the other side where the police were, and then he called me media guy, and he told me to get back. I did not get that on video, unfortunately, but as far as I know, that was the only physical altercation a Spectrum reporter had with a police officer.
What goes through your mind on a night like tonight? Do you worry about you and your reporters being respected and having your rights as journalists honored?
Yeah, and I was, you know, concerned about that tonight because I'm not looking out just for myself, but I have to look out for, you know, all the other reporters I have in the field. I don't know if this will be the last encampment attempt or, you know, protest that goes south during the semester. We've got 2.5 weeks left until commencement. So, you know, I don't know what this is going to look like, but, you know, I do worry about our rights being respected moving forward just because, you know, the police might get more tired. They might have, you know, less, quote unquote tolerance for people with phone cameras. I'm hopeful that anything else we have to cover will, you know, we'll be able to do so safely, but it's not a guarantee.
Well, Grant, thank you so much for your work leading this important reporting, and thank you for taking the time to chat with us.
Yeah, of course. Thank you, Emily.
How you doing?
Good.
When we stopped last week at the Allen Street Commercial Art Gallery Rivalry Projects, owner Ryan Arthurs was one of five working to get ready for the opening of the exhibition from Elizabeth Corkery, Well-Ripened Seeds.
And now we're in the process of laying out all the tiles, mudding the tiles into the actual heart.
Opened in 2021 at the corner of Allen and College Streets, the White Cube Gallery has exhibited mid-career, emerging, and underrepresented artists. Both owner Ryan Arthurs and director Olivia McManus are local people whose work and passion took them to other major art centers. And in that familiar but vitally important narrative, they are now putting their talents and lessons to work in Buffalo.
I mean, having worked for galleries in other places and seeing the kind of challenges, Buffalo allowed it a lot more space for us. We would never be able to have this right in San Francisco or New York.
There are a lot of considerations in larger cities where, like, you know, a friend of ours runs a gallery in New York and Chelsea, and they pay like $25,000 a month in rent. Whereas, like, Ryan owns the building, so we have a massive break in terms of overhead costs, and that provides us a safety net to take risks and to maybe do a little bit more experimental programming than some other places. But in terms of, like, the longevity of the business, it's really boils down to the support of the artists, right? Because without the work that the artists are doing, like, we have no business. And so, like, we are very, very dedicated to not only, like, developing the business side of things, but also developing the careers of the artists that we work with.
The artist behind the exhibition Well-Ripened Seeds is Elizabeth Corkery. Her artistic journey has driven her from her native Australia to her current base in Sacramento. In between, there have been stops in New York City, London, Belgium, Texas, Philadelphia, Cornell University. Experiences that have shown her how to transform her vision for an installation into reality.
Yeah, and that's actually something that I would harken back to my printmaking background too, which as a process, you almost need to know where you want to end up, and then you work backwards.
Okay.
You don't work forwards the way you might for a painter or someone that's working reactionary. So I'm very much a planner and could envisage really the whole gallery's layout.
And research, lots of research, begins the process long before an effort like well-ripened seeds can be installed for viewers in Allentown.
This interest in plants has slowly morphed into trying to understand how they plant cultivation and plant plantations, and those sorts of economies have really shaped the world we live in today. The imperial powers that built their wealth, a lot of it was on the backs of the growing of certain plants, and either quote-unquote discovering or smuggling them out of parts of the world, like rubber or sisal coming from Latin America, and then the British Empire were able to then move, cultivate those plants and have them grown in the colonies either in Asia or Africa, and grew an enormous amount of wealth on the back of these sort of commodity crops.
So I'm fortunate enough to be here before it's all assembled. At the same time, I'm not going to see what it's like until it's all assembled. So tell me what the observer is going to experience when they come in.
Yeah, so I mean, when they enter the gallery, there'll be three large tiled hearths. They'll feel like, pretty familiar items if you've been in Victorian spaces or even more contemporary ones. But they are very, very colorful. Some of them feature these different plants on some of the tiles. And then in addition to these three large features in the room, there's a series of photographs, six of them, that are of paper theater sets that I actually assembled. So again, another kind of novelty from the Victorian era when it was most popular was assembling these little sets. Often you could buy whatever opera production was happening at the time, you could often buy the set version of it and assemble it at home on your table. And within each of those little interiors that I then assembled, I have filled with, again, more of these commodity crops. So there's citrus fruits, there's nutmeg, coffee, and they look very wildly out of scale to these tiny little spaces that have been constructed. So it's really kind of touching on this outsized influence that, the toil of many creating the wealth of a few. There's, the scale is really of interest to me, and how I can kind of play with it both in photographically, and then also when someone enters the gallery, I'm always trying to figure out ways that a physical encounter with the work can transcend the documentation that you'll see of it, because so much of art that we are able to see now is just photos of installations that are elsewhere, whereas actually walking into the space, dealing with the kind of to scale, slightly overscaled feel of the hearths, and then these sort of very small theater sets that you're needing to get quite close up to, you start to get a feeling of kind of a tension can be created between feeling quite familiar. The hearths are a real kind of ubiquitous interior feature, but then you're kind of getting close up and looking at looking at these smaller photographs and discovering more as you move.
Artist Elizabeth Corkery talking about her exhibition Well-Ripened Seeds, on now at Rivalry Projects on Allen Street. While the art is at the heart of any commercial gallery, in this case, Rivalry Projects is also a big part of the story. Once, there was an empty car garage at the corner of Allen and College Streets. Now, it's a well-designed space that allows for a variety of functions, including studio production and a silkscreen spray booth. And to hear owner Ryan Arthurs and director Olivia McManus tell us, the commercial art business is strong at Rivalry Projects.
Yep, the gallery's open Wednesday to Saturday from 11 to 5, and we're also always available by appointment. The joy of living here is being able to get a message and walk downstairs and open the doors and welcome people in. If it's a dinner
that
reservation,
happens.
Oh yeah. That's, I get to meet a lot of people that way. I don't always maintain the best work personal balance, but it gets people in the doors, and it's a great way to welcome people to the space.
I think it's important to note, too, we are free and open to the public, so there is absolutely no barriers to entry. If you're curious, you can stop right in, and Ryan and I are always here and open to giving walkthroughs and answering questions. And like, we encourage that dialogue because for us, community is a big part of what we do. And we want to be a place where people feel comfortable coming to explore and to discover and ask the questions that maybe like they haven't been able to ask in other spaces.
Right. Okay.
Joy of being situated literally on a residential street between the kind of commercial, where this kind of buffer between residential and commercial. And I think that this show particularly kind of brings the residential into a kind of more of a white cube that can kind of feel a little intimidating or unfamiliar to some.
Don't forget to like or subscribe so you can help others find this podcast. And if you love it, leave a review too. The WBFO Brief Podcast and the award-winning journalism of WBFO's news team are made possible by our members. Thank you for listening.